everyone. I'm Kathy.
I'm Ashley.
And I'm La.
And this is the Better Than Seven Sons podcast. Welcome back to another episode. This season, we've been discussing topics that matter to us. And in this episode, we will be talking about the idea of choosing our well-being, or rather, knowing or trying to figure out what we need and pursuing it. And if I'm honest, I'm excited and a little bit nervous to process this topic with the both of you because I think it's important and difficult, especially for Hmong American women when it comes to this. And so the first question that I want to open us up with is, why is it so hard to think about ourselves first as Hmong American women? Like, what are the barriers?
It might not be fully like this is Hmong, but I think one of the barriers is like more so how I grew up. So I grew up as a caretaker at a younger age. So it made it difficult to choose myself because I was always in a caretaking role, whether I knew that or not. I think people around me also put me in a caretaker role. So, and it's also because, like, at least on my Hmong side of the family, I'm also the oldest grandchild too. So now you're like kind of trained to like think about your other cousins, or like, you know, if something happens, then you're in trouble. So I think like there's just like small like conditionings, I think, that you are always thinking about like someone else. And so therefore, like, you weren't, like, I wasn't personally asked like about my well-being or like the care that I needed. So I think that also was a barrier for me to like also identify what do I need, or when I care, how can someone care for me? Because I think that's just such a foreign thing for me. And so, yeah, I think some of the barriers is just like, I think there's just very small, like very, very small things that are just like woven into like family dynamics, or even like what's expected where you are in your family dynamic, or even like gender, right? I think being a woman is always like, you are always sort of seen as a caretaker, whether or not you want to. And some people are really good at it too. And then I think there's just like, there's almost like an assumption. But yeah, I don't know. Those are some of my thoughts.
Yeah. Actually, that is a Hmong thing.
I don't know how to think about it.
And I'm sure there are other like situations that would, you know, cause someone to feel that way. But I feel like that's pretty common for a Hmong daughter to feel like they need to take on the role of a caretaker. Even for me, because I was the youngest daughter, I still felt that way. Sometimes you might think maybe the older siblings take on those roles, but even for me as the youngest daughter, I felt that way because I had two younger brothers. So if you're older than a sibling, you're taking care of somebody, I think. I resonate a lot with that, like that caretaker role. I can't recall specifically what kind of messages I received that made me feel that way or made me believe that about myself. I don't know if it's just the way I seen other people take on that role, or maybe things were communicated to me in some ways that made me feel that way. I couldn't recall specifically what it was, but I do have this story that comes to mind that I always remember, was when my parents got divorced and I was 8 or 9 years old when that happened. And when my parents divorced, my dad left, he moved out. And for me, like when I saw that situation, I was thinking, who's going to fill the role of dad? Like what dad does around the house. And because dad was gone, in my mind, I was thinking, okay, now I need to take up some of his roles. So like the memory I had was going into the kitchen and picking up a knife and cutting meat, because that's what my dad did. Like when my parents were cooking, my dad was always the one who was like cutting up the meat and butchering and all those things. And I just did it. Mm. I only knew how to do it because I've just watched him do it before. It was really weird because I don't think my mom told me to do that or my mom said anything about helping her. Mm. And maybe there's like something in my personality where I feel like I have to do that too. But yeah, mm. that was like the memory that comes to mind. It's just that mm. taking care of the people around you or your family or whatever mm. mentality. Mm.
That totally makes me remember a story too. it's actually kind of funny though because, well, like my Hmong is like terrible. It's not really good. But when my grandfather had like a health problem, like he had to be like admitted to the hospital and mm-hmm. none of my aunts or uncles were available. So like I went, like Matt and I went and we like, I served on an, well, I actually went to just like see him, but then I became like the translator. Mm-hmm. And then we ended up staying and like also helping and whatnot. And we assumed that role, like just because there was like a need all of a sudden. And then what was really interesting is like with what you're saying, like you just kind of did it. You just didn't really know. Like that's whatever you said, La, that made me realize mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, like we just kind of did it. We didn't like, you just did it. And what was interesting is that one of our family gatherings, my grandfather was like praying, but he was like doing like this whole like thank you oh like it was reflecting on the year and he's thanking everyone mm-hmm. and it was really weird because he thanked myself and Matt first, like above all my aunts or uncles, and that was super weird. And I think it was just interesting because I think it just was very unexpected for us, and we're the grandchildren, but we're the first mm-hmm. grandchildren to like be married to, so mm-hmm. and then there's like this whole other thing where my uncle was like, oh, like now you guys are married, you guys have to come and help grandma and grandpa now too. And then there's this like this like passing on thing. I was like, this yes. is so weird, I don't know what to do with myself.
Yes, Ashley, I think you brought up a really good observation, or even just like the reality of like we also get rewarded for being caretakers. Like, and it's confusing, right? Because it in some weird way, it's the affirmation in Hmong culture or Asian cultures. I don't know if I can generalize it, but even though we don't, like there is that talk about how we don't get directly affirmed or praised by our parents, right? But mm-hmm. we do in that way. We get affirmed and like and conditioned and socialized in like the behaviors that they want to continue to happen. I think it's hard because it happens in small doses throughout the years. And I think that's like, and it's like direct, but also very indirect. Mm-hmm, and I think mm-hmm. being born and raised in America, it's confusing because we live in both cultures. And so I think we've had to navigate that. And I think that's another barrier. That's also why it's like really hard to think about ourselves, because we're getting different messages, right? Like growing up, we've had to navigate that constantly. And we've had to like try to understand, what does this actually mean for me, or what is this telling me, what is this message telling me? And I think that has shaped our understanding of like the world and how we navigate the communities that we're a part of and how we, you know, how we function in the world. I feel like this whole podcast has been, we're discussing all the barriers. We've discussed all the barriers, right? Like mm-hmm. why it's so hard to put ourselves first as women in our community, because we've been socialized to do that. And growing up in America, there are things that perpetuate that as women, you know? And then there are on top of that, there's also stereotypes for Asian Americans. And so the message of being the caretaker, the message of taking up that role, I think it's perpetuated in multiple circles. And I think that's why it's so hard to be like, what does it mean? What does it look like? Am I selfish then if I think that way, or if I try to like center myself?
Yeah, like our Christian faith values service, right? And, you know, like we all know service isn't a bad thing, like serving people. But mm-hmm. I think putting that together with what we learn about needing to serve people, like together, it's strengthened that value in us for us to feel like we need to always be serving people and mm-hmm. sacrificing a little bit of ourselves because that's good. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to take that too far because we're being told, you know, from different places that that is what we're supposed to do. That's good.
Yeah, I'm still figuring out what I feel about, like, the message of self-sacrificing. I was thinking about this actually yesterday, but I think it can be done in healthy ways. And I think there are very unhealthy ways that, like, just the message of self-sacrificing is. And, like, I know we can look to Jesus as the one who, like, sacrificed everything for us. But I think I always, like, I don't know, I've been thinking a lot about, like, what motivates someone to, like, sacrifice. And I was like, I don't think all of our motivations is the same as Jesus's way of sacrificing. And I think that's where it empties us. So it's always like, I think it's like, oh, I think we need to check ourselves before we say that we're going to do something for this person or this thing. I was like, I think we always need to be wary of that. Yeah. I don't know. That's something I've been like thinking about a lot. Because I think you can do things because you really do love a person. But at that point, it shouldn't feel like by doing this thing, you're empty. But those are things I've been thinking about.
Yeah, like I think we also need to understand that every value, every good trait that we think we should have has a side to it where it can be taken too far and it ends up being unhealthy or not harmful to our well-being.
That's good. So you both have alluded to how our upbringing and our faith communities have even perpetuated the idea of only focusing on serving others. So today I wanted us to look at a passage and see if there are new things that we can learn from rereading this and going over it again. The particular passage that I want us to look at is actually in the Gospel of Matthew, Luke, and Mark. And in this passage, Jesus is in a crowd and a religious leader named Jairus comes up to him to ask him to go and heal his sick daughter. And then all of a sudden, a woman that has been bleeding for 12 years touches Jesus and they have a conversation interaction and she is healed. So as you reread this passage now, what are some of the most significant things that you noticed that and also impacted you?
Well, to begin, I think it's interesting that they are in a crowded street, or I don't know, they're somewhere, and it's really crowded. And I feel like the passage is making that very clear because it says like the people were crowding around him. And then later, the disciples are also saying that, like mentioning how many people are around and crowded and touching and maybe pushing them around a little bit. And then we get this woman who has been bleeding for 12 years who sneaks through the crowd to touch Jesus's cloak. And from what we might know about like their, I think the purity laws or something, that for her as a woman who was bleeding or who I think many people believe was menstruating, she would have been outcasted or not been allowed to be in such close contact with people because she was considered
unclean.
Unclean, yes. Should be considered unclean. It just seemed like in the passage that's trying to emphasize that that is happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think adding on to what Law shared, with the purity laws and like her knowing where she stood and what like what were the consequences, I think there's an interesting, I think what I noticed this time around when I was like reading it is that and everyone talks about like the bleeding woman is like, oh, she had faith, so she touched the rope. But it's like, oh, like I think there was more than that. Like she took a risk knowing mm-hmm. what the cost would have been.
Yeah.
Because she believed and she had faith that like Jesus could heal. And so I thought the boldness and the riskiness in that cultural, not even cultural, but like just the context, stuck out to me a lot more. Like, yeah. She had way more to lose to do that. And then in contrast with it being sandwiched with the story of Jairus, you know, he has a completely different social standing. And he approaches Jesus much more freely. Mm-hmm. Has, like, less consequences to interacting with Jesus. And I don't know. So that in contrast just really stuck out to me how that was there together.
Yeah, and in addition to just contrasting with Jairus too, is because Jairus shows up in front of Jesus and pleads for Jesus to help him to heal his daughter, whereas the woman doesn't even ask for permission, right? She's just,
that's good.
I don't know, in a place where she's like, let me just get what I can get or something, and like she doesn't even touch him physically. She just touches his cloak, apparently, and she was healed immediately from it.
I love both your observations about this because, Ashley, I think you're right. There is something about, in the Christian world, we often hear faith is defined as like believing without seeing, right? But I wonder what Jesus is, or what this passage and this interaction that this woman has with Jesus, that Jesus is trying to like help us understand faith at a deeper level, because his response is like, your faith has healed you, go in peace, in Luke and in Mark. And I think you're right, it's more than just like believing without seeing. There's something about faith that Jesus is trying to like help us understand beyond even that crowd, like what that crowd understands as faith. And then also for that woman and that phrase, he is communicating something that she needs to hear that she hasn't heard from anyone else because of her situation and because of 12 years of bleeding and what that has like created for her in her life. And then I think the comparison to Jairus's situation, what stood out to me is Jesus's response to Jairus compared to like Jesus's response to the woman. In Luke and in Mark, Jesus says, don't be afraid, just keep trusting. And so, again, for me, I'm wondering about what is Jesus trying to like communicate to Jairus about his understanding of faith by him communicating that?
Yeah, and I don't think it's just Jairus, too. I think he's trying to communicate something to the crowd as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because when she touches his clothes, Jesus puts effort into trying to figure out who did it. And I feel like Jesus knows.
Yeah.
I think in the Mark and Luke story, it mentions that he asks a question like, who touched his clothes? His disciples are like, why would you ask that? Everybody's touching you right now, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it mentions again that Jesus looked around carefully. And then that's in the Mark. And then in Luke, he asks, who touched me? And then it's Peter who says, like, everybody's touching you, Jesus. And then Jesus was, like, really adamant. He's like, no, someone touched me and I felt power come out of me. Like, I feel like Jesus is sort of making a scene.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it feels like it. I don't know. I don't know if he is or if this is just, like, a really quiet whisper to, like, Peter or something, you know. But he does, because she comes forward.
Yeah.
No, it's not a whisper, because she hears. She knows that she's, like, caught or something. And she comes forward and says that she tells everything, the whole truth, in front of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jesus calls her daughter and restores her and affirms her and everything. So I think that's interesting, because Jesus was like, okay, he was making a scene. Okay, I don't know if we agree on that, but it seems like it. But then later when he heals Jairus's daughter, he like does it very secretly because he only does it in a room with only a few people. And he tells them, like, don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
And so I think there is something that Jesus is trying to communicate to Jairus and the crowd. When I read this, I think, okay, his daughter's situation is more urgent. Whereas the bleeding woman, it's like, she's been bleeding for 12 years. She could wait a little longer, right? Like,
According to the crowd?
If I was Jairus, I might be thinking that, okay? Like, I have gotten antsy over smaller things. but this is his daughter, you know? His daughter is gonna die. Or I don't know if he really truly understands what it looks like for Jesus to heal. If I was, you know, if I was Jairus and I was like, Jesus, come, and Jesus agrees, and then all of a sudden Jesus stops to talk to someone else, I might be like, what the heck, Jesus? Like, emergency, hello, right?
Yeah.
Like, I might be a little upset. And maybe that's why he addresses Jairus, because Jesus isn't mad at Jairus. Jesus is just like, I understand. That's why he tells him not to be afraid. But it seems like there are two events that feels like they're happening at the same time, and Jesus is handling both in his own way.
Yeah, I totally agree that Jesus is making a scene. Just because of the contrast of, like, with Jairus, he was so secretive about, like, that particular piece about his daughter. So I totally agree about that, because there's just so much contrast in their stories. But at the same time, I think what's interesting is that, like, you know, he says to the woman, like, your faith has healed you. But to Jairus, he says, keep trusting. Mm. And I was like, oh, I wonder how much Jairus just needed to see Jesus heal someone so that he could truly, like, believe, trust, and then, like, also put his faith in Jesus too, you know? Mm. And I think it's also because of, like, the parallels of, like, with the number 12. Like, the daughter was 12 years old, and then, like, she was bleeding for 12 years. For me, it's like, oh, that's really interesting. Yes. At the same time, like, this woman, who is probably much older, he also then, like, addresses her, not by name or anything, but, like, with the term daughter. And I think that's also, like, very intimate, which is, like, you wouldn't say that to someone who's outcasted or, like, unclean. And so I think there's, like, a shift that, like, Jesus is trying to do there. Mm-hmm. And, like, with the contrast of Jairus being, like, higher social standing, male, I just find this, like, whole, like, situation just, like, Jesus is kind of, like, doing the most, like, unexpected thing. And then, I don't know, I can't help but think, like, oh, Jesus is saying he sees the woman and he also sees the daughter at the same time.
Jesus doesn't rebuke the woman for what she did, right? Like, she broke rules. She didn't even ask for him to heal her. Like, she just does it. And I guess, I don't know, Jesus, like, has no control over his power or not. Like, that's a different question. But it seems like he allows it to happen. I don't know. He just says, like, oh, like, I felt power come out of me, almost as if he couldn't do anything about it. But it was funny because everybody's touching him, and I don't know if anyone else needed healing or not. So, but she seems significant, and I think Jesus understands that. But also, like, would it be bad for Jesus that she touched him? And so by Jesus calling her daughter, he's communicating to her and to the crowd that she didn't do anything wrong, or that he's receiving her. You know, Ashley, what you said earlier, like, it was risky for her, but it was risky for Jesus too, maybe, that she did that.
It also intrigued me that he noticed that his power had gone out of him. I feel like that's pretty significant. You know, whether that's like the majestic power that we don't understand, that Jesus has the ability to heal, but also just in worldly terms of, like, power in the sense that you have influence over a community or power and status over people. Similar to what the both of you have said, for Jesus to be able to say that out loud and to cause a scene, I think that says something about power dynamics as well. And to not make Like, he did make a deal out of it, but not in the way that we would expect him to. Like, well, why is this person doing this? Like, he didn't question her, like you both said. He just named it, and then he was like, go and you're healed because of your faith. And so I don't even know how to articulate why this is like causing me to be like, yeah. what does this say about power dynamics? Mm-hmm. Because it is pretty significant, but it's rattling me in a good way.
So I'm wondering also what the crowd, what are they perceiving from this? Mm-hmm. I'm trying real hard to think about it. There are a couple of questions that do come to mind when I think about that, what Jesus says about that, though, because, well, one is, why did it seem like only this woman was healed compared to everyone else in the crowd? And maybe nobody else in the crowd really needed healing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or, like, if they didn't really have faith or something. Mm-hmm. But also, I wonder, like, if what the crowd wants from Jesus isn't right. Like, they want something from Jesus in a way that isn't something that Jesus, I don't know, offers. Or like, maybe like what they want from Jesus isn't part of God's will or what Jesus is supposed to do.
Kind of like what Ashley said earlier about motives.
Yeah, yeah. And then the other last question is that this woman doesn't ask Jesus, but touches Jesus and is able to draw power out of him. And it's like, make me think, is it possible for us to draw power from Jesus? Mm. What does that actually look like for us? So, yeah, that was a lot of questions.
I don't have anything to, like, add on to it. But, like, you made me think about, like, how much the physical pain she's probably experiencing. And I think women can definitely understand this. And then it also made me realize, like, oh, like, I don't think I've actually, like, read it as a woman. That's another thing. Oh. Because when you hear it from the pulpit, it's usually a man sharing about the bleeding woman. So, like, I think this time around, I was like, oh, I can feel the pain. I can feel the cramps in my stomach. Like, like feel like someone's sucker punching me for, like, 12 years. Like, I was like, wow, okay. It's like, she is suffering. She's in pain. And, well, obviously, I don't think men understand that type of pain. Or if she was in pain or she's in need and suffering, like, is it even okay to ask for help? Like, because it sounds like doctors were trying to help, but, like, if you don't understand what's happening, like, how do you even ask for it? Which is why, maybe that's why she just touched Jesus and said, like, I don't know. That was just something I was thinking about. Because I'm trying to, like, women's health has always not been, like, on the front of a lot of, like, issues. So it's like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's weird because I feel like, oh, Jesus was also saying, like, I see your pain. I see, like, what you've been physically going through.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm restoring. Like, I'm making you okay. And, like, doesn't say anything else about the outcast or, like, what, like, she doesn't even name the pain. And I wonder if that's, like, a shame honor thing. Honors her in a completely different way and just sees, like, oh, your faith, right? I don't know. That's something I was thinking about.
Yeah. If I were to look at it from a woman's perspective, too, like what you were saying, Ashley, I would feel like if I was menstruating, all I want to do is lie on my couch, right? We feel a bunch of different things.
Yes.
Even our emotions are, like, different.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, if she was experiencing that for 12 years, and it could be, like, on and off or something. I don't know if she was, like, bleeding the whole time. But I would think that my body would be so drained and tired. And so it wasn't like she marched into that crowd. Like, she could have been, like,
crawling or something.
Yeah. And then, like, I think about how touch is sort of, like, the mode of healing in this passage with the Jairus' daughter and with the woman. And it's interesting because I feel like as a woman, if I was, like, having some woman bleeding type issues and I was seeing many doctors about it, I would feel very vulnerable because I don't know how these male doctors are looking at my body or touching my body. Mm. And then to touch Jesus and have Jesus touch you, it feels, I don't know what word I'm looking for, but that doesn't seem like the way I would have done it or something. Mm. I don't know.
I think what this made me realize is that the physical pain that, like, the woman that was having, like, Jesus saw and understood it. He didn't, like, overlook it. And I think that's very interesting to me. And I wonder, like, also with the sandwich of, like, Jairus. Cannot say Jairus. I kind of feel like it's an interesting, like, foreshadow, too. Because I think when I was doing my research, the age of 12 was the coming of age for, like, a woman. Or you would go from girl to woman. So, like, I think there's just something very symbolic there. Maybe that, like, Luke in particular is trying to, like, highlight. And Jesus being very a part of, like, the healing of woman, that makes me feel, like, seen as a woman and very protected as a woman, too. Like, oh, like, my body, like, does matter, or, like, my pain or my suffering, even if I don't understand what's happening, like, Jesus will understand it and we don't have to talk about it.
Yeah. There's something about both of these healing that is not patronizing, but it is very dignifying to both the women. And two of the significant things that impacted me is that when Jesus heals, or when Jesus has an interaction with someone and they, like, learn a quote unquote lesson or whatever, there is this, like, charge to go and do likewise. But in this passage, Jesus doesn't tell the bleeding woman to go and tell everybody what has happened. And then the other thing is that with Jairus's daughter, he immediately tells them to go and grab something for her to eat. So to your point, Ashley, there is something about Jesus caring about these daughters in a very humanizing way, in a way where it is like, yeah, he sees them and he cares about their well-being for the sake that they are daughters, not because they're going to go and, like, do likewise and be evangelists and start prayer. You know, like, those are all good things, but there isn't, like, a charge that I feel like the significance, I think, for these two is that Jesus sees them and Jesus heals them because they are daughters. And that was it.
Do you think it's interesting how the woman transitions from woman to daughter and then the daughter transitions from daughter to child? Or a young woman or something? Because she's referred to as daughter. And then the narrator follows after Jesus. So Jesus calls her child, and then the narrator starts calling her child. And then Jesus calls her young woman, and then the narrator starts calling her young woman. So at least in the Mark passage, I wonder if names are significant.
With the ending with young woman, I wonder if that's applying to both the bleeding woman and also Jairus' daughter. Because I wonder if there's, I don't know, like, when you're bleeding for so long, you probably can't conceive, if I'm correct. I'm not a medical expert. But I wonder if there's, like, a restoration to her physical, like, sense of being a woman, where it's like, oh, all those 12 years is, like, redeemed in some ways. I wonder if that's, like, for the bleeding woman, and then also with, like, the age of 12 being, like, the coming of age for a woman. I wonder if that's, like, this child is now, like, a young woman.
Because there's that contrast between Jairus' daughter and the woman in some ways, and they're both called daughter. But then they sort of go in opposite directions, where young women's like, you get to become a woman. Whereas for the bleeding woman, it's like, you get to relive those 12 years that you lost. Like, you could be, like, a little girl again and live life.
That's like... That makes me feel certain.
Well, I mean, I feel like that feels right.
Yeah.
Well, if she's truly dead and, like, does come, the child daughter dies and comes back to life, there's also, like, just that, like, resurrection type, like, you can live again.
Yeah, like a second chance at life or something.
Yeah. Wow, this is so, like, different from, like...
This makes me think about even our conversations earlier as relates to why is it so hard to, like, put ourselves first? Because as daughters, we kind of don't get to be daughters. Yeah. Especially among American women. And there is something very special about being called daughter. And being seen as a daughter, as like a Like, you don't have to only, like, we will care for you. Again, not in a patronizing way, not in the sense of, like, you know, you all have done so much or you suffer so much, we're going to, like, save you from this role. But it's more of, like, we see what you've had to carry and had to go through, and we want to, like, it's a solidarity type of thing. And it's, like, a care and a love in a way where it's saying that you no longer have to do this by yourself, or mm-hmm. you no longer have to suffer alone, because we are here with you and I am here with you, especially from Jesus. Mm-hmm. And what comes to mind personally is, Ashley, when we went to go interview your grandparents mm-hmm. For a film project that we did, and when your grandparents were talking to us and exhorting us and encouraging us as ministers, and they kept on saying, they kept on calling us daughters. They kept mm-hmm. on saying, you know, like, don't give up hope. And like, it's hard, but it's okay. And like, it moved me for them to address mm-hmm. us as daughters that are ministers, because there's something in that, that the way that they like called us that, and the tone that made me feel like they saw us and they knew us.
Yeah, it's interesting, because when I, thinking back to what we talked about at the beginning of this episode about being caretakers, the way that we grew up so fast, and maybe much earlier than we wanted to, and suddenly this just really resonates, because this woman who was bleeding for 12 years, like, that was a detour in her life that she probably did not want, I'm pretty sure, or expected. And then it changed her life mm-hmm. in so many ways, right? Like, she becomes an outcast. All her money is probably spent on, you know, finding doctors who might have some answers or solution for her. And then just, yeah, like, chronic suffering from her condition. Like, you would expect people to be really depressed because of that. Yeah. And she didn't get to live. And now she gets to do that. Mm. I think about, like, what parts of growing up do we miss out on because we skipped that part a little bit in some areas of our lives and became adults. Mm. The moment we could, I don't know, the moment we started puberty, I guess. That might have been true for all of us.
I mean, we're kind of talking about this already, so I'm just going to ask, like, how does knowing that Jesus sees and cares for us and, like, our bodies and our well-being shift our understanding of choosing ourselves then?
I feel like for the bleeding woman, that she knowingly walks into this crowd to seek her own healing. Like, for her, I don't know, like, if she's thinking this, but for her at that moment, it's like, right now, what matters is me, and this is my chance to be healed or whatever. I don't know, like, was she concerned about people what around her? Like, I don't know what she thinks about the purity laws or what she believes about them. But it just seemed like at that moment, she put herself first. And that seems significant. And Jesus accepts that. You know, we said, like, he doesn't rebuke her. He tells her, go in peace. I feel like that's a way of saying, you're not guilty of anything. You can have peace, you know? So I feel like for us, we tend to believe that it's selfish or wrong for us to put ourselves first. Mm. I mean, I guess if we do that all the time, then that does actually make us selfish. But there are times in our lives where we need to do that. And I feel like this woman models that in some ways. And that's acceptable to Jesus.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very naturally just like against the grain type person. But I mean, from here, reading it as a woman, it just makes, like, when it matters, you can defy what people might think of you. Like, even though they might not understand what is happening to you, so that you can, like, go and care for yourself. And, like, that Jesus also sees you are doing that. Mm. It's, like, I don't think she's trying to harm people, even with, in the context of, like, purity laws, right? Because there's consequences, right? For if she touches someone, then they're unclean or et cetera. But it's, like, there are times when you can do what you think you need to do because it is important for you. And Jesus sees why you are doing that. And I think that matters to Jesus.
In some ways, we know this in theory, that Jesus loves us, Jesus sees us, Jesus cares about us. But yet, because of how we've been brought up, it makes me sad that this is still a message that, and a truth that we still need to keep hearing and believing. Like, this shouldn't be a radical thing. But yet, it's so hard to live that out, or it's so hard to, like, we often are stuck wrestling with a, like, if I choose myself, am I being too selfish? Like, we have to pick one or the other. And we still don't know how to, like, navigate that. Because there's always, we don't go in peace. We always feel guilty. I don't know about the both of you, but if I'm honest, like, every day I think about that in all my choices or, you know. On one hand, like, reading this passage with the both of you now and like, really hearing that from, like, a woman's perspective and really, like, diving deeper into it is affirming and helpful. But similar to the 12 years that the woman was bleeding, like, we've had, what, 20, 30 plus years of wrestling. And I don't want to compare, like, the suffering of her bleeding to, like, our socialization of being helpers. But it is, like, years and years of, like, learning how to be in this world as caretakers. And so for me, as we, like, look at it and center from our perspective, I wonder, like, how does this impact our relationship to our communities that we're a part of, like, in our families, in our churches, with our friends, our colleagues? Because I don't think it is, like, choosing one over the other. It's discerning, right? Like, it's discerning. When do we know how to choose ourselves? When do we choose our well-being? How does, like, what does that actually look like? And how do we pursue it?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because I don't think, like, I don't think what we're trying to say is, like, these are the five tasks or five things that you need to do in order to choose yourself. And I also don't think that we're saying forget about community, because that is something that earlier we did say, like, it's not all bad that we're thinking about other people besides ourselves. That's actually a good thing. But, like, when that's the only message that you're getting and that's the only thing that you're living out, then you do neglect yourself, and that's not healthy or helpful.
This makes me think about the movie Turning Red. So sorry if you haven't seen it. But so, okay, so, like, because I think what's interesting is it's, like, very, like, you know, it's animated. I heard a lot of folks saying, like, it's inappropriate. I'm just like, yeah. It's a very nuanced story. Like, mm-hmm. It's in the 2000s. It's, like, Chinese Canadian. It's like all these, like, other layers. But I think the reaction to just this whole, like, movie is kind of shocking to me, because it has, like, the Asian values of, like, honoring your parents and stuff like that. And I think what's really interesting is, like, you know, like, this young teenager is trying to figure out how to choose herself, right? Mm. And it's like, your decision of choosing yourself will probably and will most likely go against culture, and that's going to be felt. And that's just what you have to discern, is if that's what, like, you are okay with. Because I was thinking about it, I was like, it's actually not a bad story. I actually really enjoyed it. And, like, those with the high cultural values, yeah, I can see how it's, like, it's teaching maybe children to go against a specific culture that maybe you want to instill in your child. And I totally understand that, but I think that's, like, the interesting part of being in this kind of, like, and especially among American, right? You're trying to figure out, like, if I make this decision, this is going to be the consequence of this decision, but I kind of need this either for myself, or maybe I will prioritize something else where I'm making a decision that prioritizes my family in this situation, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just think it's very interesting. I think no matter what, we're going to get, like, flack, because it's just different.
Yeah,
and it's new. Doesn't mean it's wrong. And other people might make us feel like it's wrong, and that's just what you might have to discern. Like, you kind of just have to choose, I think, and, like, trust that, like, this sounds terrible, but like, trust that God is going to be with you in that discernment and that decision that you're making, even though it might hurt family, hoping and knowing that Jesus like sees you and sees what you're trying to do, and that's also good and it's okay. And mm-hmm. it's like, you're not trying to be malice or anything about like, you know, you're rubbing against something, but like, I think it's also okay because Jesus is rubbing against other things too. But I don't know. That's what I'm processing and thinking about.
Yeah. Yeah, because I feel like cultural values and things that make it difficult for us to choose ourselves and our well-being, or even like the patriarchy, like those things aren't going to go away. Mm-hmm. Every decision we make is always going to impact someone else.
Yeah.
In some ways. And I think when we start thinking that we need to please everyone, that's when we start thinking we're God, you know? Mm. And going off of what Ashley was saying, there is an amount of trust when it comes to choosing ourselves. And I feel like when we could take that position, I think that's good. And when we can go in thinking that, and even that we even consider other people and how it impacts other people, I think that's a good practice for us to have in general. Like, if you're just choosing yourself and you're like, I don't care about anybody else, let me just do what I want to do. Like, sometimes that's not the best thing to do. I mean, sometimes maybe that's what you need to say to get yourself to actually choose yourself. But like, but you know, like thinking that way may not be the most helpful all the time. But yeah, like that's just the reality, is that what we choose to do is going to impact someone else. Even if we decide to make a decision in service of other people, I feel like someone else is going to lose out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, the Sunday school answer is trust God in all of this.
That is the tension that we hold or feel that keeps us from actually choosing our well-being, because we've been taught a certain way of doing things and that is the right way. And what the impact is actually not our decision. The impact is more the fact that it's different, and that makes mm-hmm. everybody, including ourselves, feel uncomfortable. And so I wonder if for us as Hmong American women, we just need to, exactly what you said, like trust in God, but also like trust that we, because we've had to think about these things so much, that like what we're choosing is good for us and everyone around us. And what is actually hard is not necessarily like discerning whether or not it's wrong or right, but what's hard is actually just dealing with the impact and like having the conversations that we've never had before, because we've never decided. We've always only done what we're told or what, you know, is expected. And when we choose differently, we have to like actually process that for ourselves. And then we have to like have those conversations. And that's hard, not just for us. It's hard for everyone else because they've never had to deal with the impact of that. Mm-hmm. And that's what's scary. It's not even the fact that like it's wrong. It's the fact that it's so different and unknown.
I think that's like that's the faith part. Like, and it reminds me what we talk about with the bleeding woman, like it just like that's the faith part, like navigating all that, like to do all that, to navigate all that, that's the faith part. And there's like a faith, you have to have faith to almost choose yourself or to work through it to choose yourself.
I feel like Jesus shows that too, right? You know, going back to Jairus and the woman, where Jairus has to witness this, where like this woman chooses herself, right? She doesn't care about what other people need. She's like, well, maybe she does, I don't know, but like she knows what she needs and she goes for it. And that interrupts Jesus going to Jairus's place. And Jairus, who knows? I mean, I would be freaking out. I feel like that's true for Jairus. Yeah. But I feel like, and then, like, Jesus honors what the woman does. Yeah. And I feel like Jesus is saying to Jairus, like, I got this. Don't worry. Like, because a woman chose herself, it still didn't keep Jesus from being able to heal someone else who was also in great need at the same time.
Oh, that's good. So.
Well, and because people, like the crowd got to witness that, they're realizing that it's not choosing one over the other. Jesus didn't choose.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not a this versus that and what's more important. And I think for us as Hmong Americans, like, I think that's also what we wrestle with so much. It's like, are we choosing one culture over the other? Are we being too American? Are we being like, I at least that's what I wrestle with. And I'm like, am I just like betraying my culture and my people and my parents in particular? But I think for us, it's more about sometimes when we choose ourselves, it does actually still benefits the community and we don't have to choose. And that's a good thing. I don't know about the both of you. This ended up being a really fun episode and also very powerful. I know I'm leaving with a lot of nuggets and just wanting to read more. And so I hope that that's true for our listeners as well. And we would love to hear how these passages now impact you as you reread them and have listened to our conversation about it.
Thank you for joining us today. If you enjoy your time with us, please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. To stay up to date, follow us on Instagram at BTSS Podcast. See you in our next episode.